talk so much about it. I know the reason that you like it. Get away from the wife for a few hours, drink your head off. Football, football, football. What do you talk so much about it? I know the reason that you like it. Get away from the wife for a few hours, drink your head off. Football.
Welcome to episode 68 of the Men Who Say Football, the Dundalk FC Fancast. This is a post-match reaction to a rather grim night in Longford, where we actually managed to be beaten by a, at times, 10-man and ultimately 9-man Longford, bringing us to something of a season low. Guys, could you quite believe what happened yesterday?
Could, because I think to a degree you could write the script beforehand. Like, if I was going to predict some Dundalk performances at the moment, like, what I would say is, you know, sort of comments beforehand saying that, you know, training was going really well, we were really up for it. You know, meet a team that puts us under a lot of, you know, physical intensity, loads of possession without making any sort of real headway despite that. And then, you know, some kind of calamity or an inability to keep clean sheet under, you know, very modest pressure from the opposition, culminating in, I don't know, either us losing the match or, you know, sort of scrambling to a draw later on. Like, that is the script of the way our season has gone so far and the way I sort of, I fear that every game will go at the moment. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. You know, we had so much possession in that game, but a very large majority of it, you know, with Daniel Cleary, or Djurkovskis, or Andy Boyle, or, you know, sort of Cameron Yates, just sort of knocking the ball across the back. No real intensity or tempo to the play. An inability to really sort of penetrate Longford, get much in the way of shots on target, you know, things like that. And we did have the odd chance. You know, I'm not saying it was completely without merit, but, you know, for the vast majority of the first half, we had loads of possession without threatening really to do anything with it. And lo and behold, we were put under, you know, the tiniest bit of pressure for a free kick. A free kick, which I have to say should never have been given. Like, nobody on the Longford side appealed for it. The Dundalk players looked mystified. The referee was the only person on the ground who seemed to think that was a free kick. Like, it was really bizarre. But that aside, you've got to be able to do the basics, right? A mediocre ball sort of lofted into the box, a mediocre header on it, and it ends up in the back of the net. Like, just unbelievable stuff. Now, at that stage, like, I fully expected Dundalk to get back into the game, to make chances, you know, to get a goal from somewhere. But the longer it went on, you know, we did not increase that tempo at any stage. When they went down to 10 men, and indeed 9 men, we had more space to knock the ball around, but we didn't knock it around any faster. The quality of delivery into the ball, probably, you know, with one or two exceptions, was really, really poor. And they saw it out in the end. And so, yeah, was I surprised? No, not particularly.
It's mad, yeah, that you should say that, because we're supposed to go, yeah, we're absolutely shocked with last night's performance, last night's result. And you're right, Martin, there was nothing actually, you know, that shocking, apart from the fact that we got bet by Longford, who have won one game this season, and our budget is colossal, and theirs isn't. And it was a real, real bottom of the table kind of scrap. I mean, you're right, there is a script. That's the script every single week. We come out, we put pressure on, we miss chances within the first 10, 15 minutes. And then after that, it's like we didn't score. So it's the towel's been thrown in or whatever. Just thought we were tired last. We looked tired, looked disinterested, uninterested. I said we were ineffective in everything that we did. I don't know. It was tough to watch. I actually called it before their goal went in, I said, this team isn't scoring. And then when their goal went in, I said, that's it, we're losing. And it wouldn't have mattered, I don't think, if Longford went down to 6 men last night. We wouldn't have, we would never have scored, and we wouldn't have beaten them. And it's just, it's all too familiar, and woefully familiar at this stage, that we're blunt and we can't score. And I don't know what it is. Like, you look at that team on you know, the team's released. As you said, Martin, what's coming from the camp is that they're prepared, they're up for the game, you know, everything's going good. You look at that team sheet and you go, that team sheet should be competing at the top end of the table. And we can't even compete at the bottom end of the table. It's just incredible stuff. And I can understand, like, the Dundalk fans are, you know, really, really annoyed with this. And, you know, where to put the blame? Because obviously as a fan, you want to say, well, he's the blame or that's the blame. And I think we've covered it over and over on this podcast where we think the blame lies. But that's just really, last night's results just really, really, really is not good enough, you know, for a club that won the FAI Cup last year, played, you know, exceptional European football this season. And it's as if, like, there's, you know, a different 11 out on the pitch. Now, I know we're missing a few players due to injury, but it's just, like, it's an unfamiliar 11. Everything was ineffective. The substitutions were ineffective. And usually substitutions bring, you know, a little bit of impetus into the team, you know, especially when they settle in. But they were ineffective last night. And, you know, big questions are, you know, going to be asked now, because I think people are going to start turning on, you know, the coaching staff. And, you know, I think some people have rounded on the players already. So, you know, this is going to be, it's a very, very tough week for Sligo flying high. I can't see us again picking up any points in our three games. You know, they say games in hand aren't points in hand, and I think this is a real, real case of that on our form.
Yeah, I'm going to hit you with a slightly bizarre Formula One analogy here, but there was a stage where Martin Brundle was the co-commentator in a lot of the Formula One stuff, and he said that, you know, there were situations in his career where lots of times you were driving a car with problems where there was, you know, sort of understeer, oversteer, you were struggling to, you know, keep it in a straight line, this kind of thing. These were all reasons why, you know, you might not be doing too well on the racetrack. But he always said the worst feeling of all was for the car to be perfectly balanced, to look good, but just be slow, right? So there was nothing obvious to be corrected. And I think when you talk about looking at the first 11 of this team, you look at it and you say there's plenty of talent in there. There's plenty of, you know, people who have played at a high level, who've performed much better than they are right now. You know, what is wrong? And we're keeping lots of possession. We've got quality players at the back. We've got quality people up front, like Pat Hoopen. We've got quality players in midfield. Like, why is this team not performing, right? There's just a slowness and a lethargy about it. And like I say, that big thing is so much possession and so little tempo. Like, we were basically undone by a Longford team that were fit and organised, but no real, you know, sort of particular quality themselves. And that's not to, you know, sort of slag off Longford, right? They're a professional team and they have got quality, but, you know, relative to the rest of the league, right? What they had was organisation. They put us under, you know, sort of modest pressure in terms of when we had the ball, and we failed to crack them open really at any stage, right? No, you know, sort of really quality passing or turning on the ball or moments where we could get away. I think they had correctly identified maybe Sam Stanton as a player who was a bit of a threat. So anytime Sam got the ball, there was, you know, three or four Longford players really sort of swarming all over them. But that should have left gaps elsewhere, right? If Sam, you know, gets a pass off to somebody else, there should have been, you know, somebody like a Will Patching or a Greg Sloggett in an ocean of space. We never found them, right? We never raised that tempo. All of the passing, again, like I say, was with Cleary and Boyle and Yates. And really no penetration up top. Like, that is, I think, very worrying.
Obviously, fans are looking for an explanation for this. There seemed to be a lot of anger after that performance. Also, a growing sense of apathy, both seemingly on the field and on the terraces. And yet, it could have been quite different. In the first 15 minutes, Dundalk looked, it's probably forgotten now, but we looked quite bright. We looked like this was going to be a game that we were going to take by the scruff of the neck. Pat Hoban had a very good chance, a shot from a break on about 7 minutes. And then there was a chance, once again, from a Dummigan cross. Pat Hoban, you know, had a header, which normally he just tuck away, but just went wide of the post. And it very much looked like, I think the commentators mentioned, Dundalk had created three or four really good chances in the first 15 minutes. But just after that, there seemed to be an ebbing away of Dundalk's attacking menace. And once again, we got like a dozen corners and never really did anything all that special with them. I know Andy Boyle's chance that comes back off the post, you're just kind of hoping that that's going to break for you so that you get into the game and, you know, then maybe you get that boost in confidence. But as you say, it was a wearily familiar performance. I know Dundalk have injury issues, and I think, you know, once again, we still have the initial recruitment issues that have been introduced into the squad over the last couple of transfer windows. where seemingly we have let more quality leave the club than enter it. But I think if you look at sort of maybe further explanations, definitely there seem to be more fight and desire and organization within Longford collectively. I think some Dundalk players acquitted themselves, you know, decently. They seem to be in the game. Others seem to be sort of strolling through it in a rather perfunctory manner. And that's really worrying. And perhaps an explanation for that is that, once again, although the protestations of Innie Pertis at the club is moving in the right direction, and we had rumours on even reports of an impending contract offer for Vinnie Pert, it seems that that now has been stalled, or at least it hasn't been announced, because there was some whispers of a potential takeover. So once again, we're back to an atmosphere of complete uncertainty. And last night's team probably looked and probably betrayed the fact that many of the players, they don't know where they'll be in 6 weeks' time. And that, once again, is that's something that some of our listeners have mentioned on Twitter. They've said that, you know, a great deal of uncertainty is surrounding the club again, just like we had last year. And we saw the effects of that then, and perhaps we're seeing the effects of it now. Michelle Hillen, for example, has come in on Twitter and she said, "Contracts, contracts, contracts. The one thing Dundalk FC had going for them was the opportunity to offer player security. Peak Six have opted to take that away, and the players' desire and passion has faded into the ether. Not only did Peak Six let some of the best players in the league that we have ever seen here leave, but they also let people like Steve Williams and go, and without wanting to be disrespectful to their replacements, their absence is felt. The team should watch back the game against Cork in 2014 rather than the one from last night." Now, I mean, if you take, for example, once again, the weakness which cost us the game last night, once again, was at the goalkeeping position. And, you know, to run with Michelle's point there, we kind of all looked on with grave concern as Gary Rogers retired. And maybe that was always going to be his decision. But I think the madness of what was going on behind the scenes was a contributing factor there. And I think Gary has more or less indicated that in some of the media interviews that he's done since. We know that Aaron McCarry was also let go. He's gone on to much better things. David Odemusa was allowed go and is getting rave reviews at Drogheda. And we took a gamble on an unknown, untried goalkeeper from another league who hasn't worked out. Are they back up? We saw Peter Cherry's last game against Longford. That was a really poor performance as well. And Cameron Yates, I suppose most people were eager to see him selected. But again, you know, Cameron Yates may be a good goalkeeper, but he hasn't played a lot of football over this last while. He's not really match sharp. And in a crucial game where points are at stake that will alleviate a lot of pressure on you, we can see again a serious goalkeeping error. Now, not to blame, once again, the individuals involved. Anybody is capable of mistakes on the field of play. But if you look again, it's a story of quality and potential quality leaving the club and then players being brought here who, you know, simply can't perform, and we have no safety net. And we see that all over the field now, because, you know, like last night, who was our anchor man? Who was our defensive midfielder? Well, it seemed to be somewhat rotating and fluid and interchangeable, which kind of tells you that you no longer have a dedicated player in that position. Back to this problem that we had at the start of the season when Zahiba was trying to be integrated into the team alongside Shields. The two of them were too similar and a totally unbalanced midfield. Now, when Vinny came back, we seemed to just happen upon a happy blend where Patching was our attacking midfielder and we had Stanton, who was lying low, and McElhenney was in brilliant form in the middle. Now, you take one of those out of that trio and you're back to putting in somebody very like one or the other of the remaining two, and you've unbalanced your midfield. So once again, our midfield last night might be full of individually, you know, players that should be bossing it, but when they're not balanced, we get that sort of, you know, slow tempo and that lethargy and the team not quite working so well. So, like, although there may be problems with the current squad, particularly after the the mauling in Derry, where basically we picked up a lot of serious injuries that seems to have put David McMillan out long term, who would have been an important option to have last night, and also Patrick McElhenney, who seemed to be stepping into the Chris Shields role as being the sort of inspirational leader of the team in midfield. We do have that problem, the current injury crisis, but we've also got the problem that we're paying for that Vinnie Peart really hasn't got the ability to address, which is the rather slipshod and let's call it what it is, the frankly disastrous recruitment that has been done over the last two transfer windows, which, like, let's put it in perspective. Not only did we let all those quality players and backroom staff leave at the end of last season, but in the current window, we further weakened the squad by allowing Chris Shields to go. And the only players that we have been able to bring in are players who are free agents who haven't played first team football for a very long time.
Yeah, going back to Vinny's contract situation, that's a funny one, because, like, normally in a town like Dundalk, you know, you hear, I've said this before, you hear the rumours, you know, in the bakery or in the butchers, or you hear, you know, people saying, oh yeah, Vinny's been offered a contract. And there's been other rumours in terms of ownership as well this week, running around the town like wildfire. But yeah, going back to Vinny's, what I heard, you know, along the grapevine, or that it was a done deal, that's, you know, just waiting to be announced, that papers are signed and the whole lot. And that's gone back early rumour around the town. I like that, it's the uncertainty. I think when, like uncertainty for us as fans, we just get on with our daily lives. Like, we watch it at the weekend, and we listen to the rumours, and we have a discussion about what's going on. But imagine, like, the uncertainty around your actual job. And I think a lot of that, you know, is, we can see it on the pitch. You know, some people, I'm kind of conflicted on this one. You know, people say, well, they're sports professionals and they should give it their all until the final whistle. I don't think it works like that. I think that if you have uncertainty hanging over your head, it affects your personal, you know, personal life, and it has to affect your working life as well. I mean, I'm split 60-40 on the whole thing about them being professionals and the whole thing about, you know, contract insecurity. I'd imagine that if my position in the morning became very unstable, that, you know, it would affect me. Like, I suppose if you even turn to the current pandemic and the lockdowns and the uncertainty that we face across the last 2 years, like, that has an effect on people's, you know, health and well-being. So you could imagine it's just the same for football players that don't know where they're actually going to be at the end of the season and the start of next season. So yeah, I think uncertainty is a big thing that we're actually seeing on the pitch at the moment.
If I could just turn to Twitter, obviously some of these tweets are from last night, and they sort of encapsulate a certain mood of doom and gloom. Michael Shine said, nothing much to say other than yet another disgraceful performance, an absolute new low. And Peak Six have ruined it, yes, but too few are pointing the blame on the well-paid players. Their lack of efforts are a direct result on our current plight. A lot or most just don't care. Kevin Mullen, who was at the game, has come in to say, just in the door from the match. On another day, we could have won 4-5-0, but a combination of bad finishing, bad goalkeeping and a lack of urgency sees us come up short. Even against 9, there was no sense that the goal was coming. We are in big trouble. It's a complete mess. Don Dalgan says, the chaos is sown by the disastrous meddling of the ownership. I think we've made lots of mentions of that. Juan More Tune said, no bonuses in place for the League of Ireland. It's clear from how they played in Europe. To that deplorable display last night. No passion from any of the players and no leader in the team. Now, that's one of the things, you know, may not go quite that far myself, but that's one of the things which is really a conspicuous contrast. How can this basic group of players have played so well against Vitesse Arnhem and really should have bet them only a matter of weeks ago? Like, we talk about recruitment from the start of the season, but a couple of weeks ago, we were looking like a really impressive side. Now, I know there's been a few key injuries. Vinnie Peart in his post-match interview said, you know, while we don't have those players available right now, like losing David McMillan, losing Patrick McElhenney, you know, that's the difference between last night's performance and the performance against Vitesse Arnhem. Do you think that that's a legitimate excuse?
We said at the time that if the team, like, displayed such an intensity and such quality against Vitesse Arnhem, that we said if they go back out and play in that same way in the league, then they should have no trouble beating anybody in the league. Like, the quality was obviously there. But in the subsequent weeks, they haven't. And I think that is surprising. But it's sort of, you know, for a couple of weeks, I think we had this sort of European hangover in mind, right? We thought to ourselves, well, you know, it can be excused, the performance against Pats, because it was in between the two legs. It can be excused, the performance against Drogheda, because, well, maybe they were only just sort of recovering after the defeat or something like that. But, you know, the weeks are ticking by and there is no sign of a return to, like I say, that level of tempo and intensity. And that is very troubling. Like, that, there isn't an obvious reason for it, you know. Yes, we've lost a couple of people in terms of personnel, but the majority of that team that played against Vitesse are still there. Like, they're still out in the pitch and are definitely capable of more, but they're not producing it. And I suppose that is the big question, why, right? We don't have an answer.
Well, Rory Gilson might have an answer. He's tweeted in to say, "You boys were mad to get Vinny back." Now, I don't know if that's mad in that we were very enthusiastic about getting Vinny back or we were insane to want Vinny back. How much do you think Vinny carries to can for the current level of performances? I mean, we did come in, he did come in and there did seem to be a bit of a bounce. And those games in which we lost in the league, say against Shamrock Rovers and against Pats and, you know, even perhaps against Drogheda, there were moments when we were well in the game and even the better team often for large portions of the game. But it was different last night. I mean, that was a poor performance by any measure. I suppose there seems to be some questioning of Vinny Perth. It seems less certain now that a contract offer would be greeted with such universal acclaim. I still think he's, you know, our best option. My personal view would be his arrival, we've said it before, it's not a panacea. He didn't come in with a magic wand that undid all the damage which had been done. I mean, I think we've had now three dismal transfer windows where, like, ludicrous decisions have been made. They've weakened the squad substantially. They've expended resources on lavishly on players who can't even give us 10 minutes. Vinny Perth, to me, that's all beyond his control. He's inherited a mess. You know, it's like, you know, appointing a new manager at Chernobyl after the reactor's blown up and then being wondering, you know, why there's still a radiation issue. That'd be my personal view. Do you think Vinny is in the crosshairs for criticism legitimately?
I think that Vinny, you know, Vinny was under was in the crosshairs for criticism when we were a penalty kick away from a treble. Like, that's a fact. I remember meeting people going, he's not the man for the job. It's like, you know, you're kind of going, well, there's a penalty kick away from a treble and he's not the man. I'm not saying Rory was saying that at all. Rory Gilson was saying that at all. That's not what I'm saying. I do think that people, I think some people like Vinny, other people don't like Vinny. I mean, I don't know Vinny. I mean, all I know is that, you know, he's a good manager. I have to agree with you, Ken. I think that he is the man for the job. When you look out there in the League of Ireland, who else would you appoint? My position is that, you know, when you appoint managers from outside the league or managers from lower leagues than our own league, then you're asking for trouble. So I don't see how a manager who is so successful at our club isn't the right man for the job. Do I think that he should be in the crosshairs personally? I think he has to shoulder some responsibility, especially for last night's result. It might be out of his hands, but I definitely agree with you, Ken, that, you know, he doesn't have, you know, first of all, his own team or his own squad. That's not his own team or his own squad. And there was a lot of appointments and signings to that squad that just are not up to League of Ireland standard. And that's a fact. Why we have, you know, went from being able to be so competitive in Europe to not being able to beat Longford Town, have only won one game in the season, I just don't know. But, you know, if we're going to contrast, you know, the highs and the lows, then you have to look at the highs and say that was a team, you know, that did so well in Europe. Like, it wasn't just that we played and we were lucky against a bigger team. We should have actually been true. We were the better team in that second leg. So a manager that can bring out those performances is a decent manager in my book. And I think having somebody that is immersed in the League of Ireland culture and who takes pride in the league is the man, you know, is a man for the job.
I think he has to shoulder some criticism for some of the performances, because we just said 5 minutes ago that this team is capable of much more. Like, we've seen them produce it, right? So the coach's job is to motivate the players and set them up in the right way to produce their best. And they're not doing it right now, right? So I think questions have to be asked about his performance. But everything you've just said is true. I think there was a lot for Vinny to try and fix. I think one of the big problems is maybe his own backroom team, right? So when he previously was in charge of the club, he had John Gill at his side, Alan Reynolds for a while, Stephen O'Donnell for another period, Rory Higgins, right? Although those people are now departed, I noticed it seems to be Liam Burns on the touchline at the moment. Like, I'm sure Liam is doing a reasonably good job, but I think in terms of the amount of resources that he has to, you know, sort of fall back on, it's much diminished compared to, you know, his previous time in charge of the club. I mean, I think on one hand, Vinny has to keep morale up in terms of inside the team, right? He's got to try and look for the positives and some sort of positivity to, you know, sort of motivate the players and get them performing well. But from a fan's perspective, when he comes out and says that the club's moving in the right direction and that everybody's training well and it's the best they've trained, you know, all season, and then we see performances like that, right? It is, I don't know, it's hard to square that, right? It's hard to feel like, you know, the reality is the same for what the fans are witnessing and from what Vinny is saying, right? So, I don't know, he's putting himself, I think, in a slightly difficult position there when he does that kind of thing. But as you say, may not be his fault, like, and there might be genuine reasons for doing it.
A lot of people have been commenting on Vinny's media comments. I just think he's in a situation, like the initial problem, which has sort of led to our decline, I think that still exists. If Vinny Pert was honest about what has been done with the club, he'd probably be sacked in the morning. The bottom line is, you know, Vinny has come in, he's tried to boost morale, he's tried to say the new players are sort of, you know, he even went as far as to say the squad has improved in some dimensions. And I think what you've got to realize is, you know, he's sort of captured in a system whereby, once again, we know we have a chairman who's meddled. I think Bill has made statements in the media, you know, which are hard to believe are the truth when he talks about, oh, I might have given opinions and these might have been interpreted as orders and misinterpreted as orders, and now I've stopped giving opinions. I mean, that's just not credible at all. Josh Gatt, in the club's own publicity videos, said that Bill had signed them. And we've heard often enough how Bill demanded particular players be signed and particular players be played, even though that totally disrupted the squad. So, you know, there seems to be a sort of a fog of lies emanating from the Dundalk FC boardroom. And it just seems that if Vinny wants to work for Dundalk FC, sometimes he's going to be obscured in that fog. Anyway, one of the most difficult moments in Vinny's league-winning campaign came with the performance and defeat in Sligo. And after that, he did actually turn it around from a time where the teams appeared to be going into something of a decline and its league challenge coming off the rails. He did manage to go on that famous unbeaten run, which saw us eventually, you know, reclaim that 13-point lead from Shamrock Rovers to win the league. I suppose he's going to have to dig deep again to find the resilience to overcome what looks like a terminal decline. And that begins on Tuesday in the Showgrounds, where a rejuvenated Sligo Rovers will be the opponents. We'll be back to talk about the Sligo game on Tuesday evening. But for now, I'd like to thank contributors Martin Mullen and Damien Kennedy. Thank you for all your contributions on Twitter and for listening. And we'll talk to you after the game in Sligo on Tuesday. Let's hear from the man who shake the face of football. The face of football.